Okay, I'm gonna get started. We're waiting a few minutes for a couple people to trickle in, but say welcome everyone. Thank you all for being here today in the Microsoft track at GDC 2017. The Universal Windows Platform provides new opportunities for all kinds of applications across Windows devices. But games tend to be a very unique type of application, often pushing at the boundaries of what's possible on a piece of hardware and driving platform functionality. And it's for that reason that we have been adding improvements to the Universal Windows Platform specifically for games and game developers. My name is Eric Walston. I'm an engineer in the Xbox Advanced Technology Group, and today I have the great pleasure of showing you what we're working on in Windows 10 to make gaming better and game development easier for UWP games. So, what is this talk all about? What do I actually mean by the evolution of UWP game development? Well, this is what it boils down to. We are listening to your feedback, and we're iterating on the best features to bring to developers so that we can make the Universal Windows Platform the best development platform for Windows and Xbox. There have been many great games, big and small, AAA and indie, that have shipped on the Universal Windows Platform. We already have great support and great content, but we're not stopping there. Today, I'll be discussing some of the new features we're adding to UWP, game mode being just one awesome example, and I'll show you that we are going to continue to make improvements to make UWP the application model of choice for game development. And the truth is, it's already here in a big way. Our first-party studios have led a charge in adoption of the Universal Windows Platform for game development. Here are just some of the UWP titles that have come out since September, 6 months. All of them are available on the Windows Store, and we have many more, both coming soon or already in game preview. We are growing the UWP family with blockbuster games, amazing visuals and creativity with Direct 3D 12, and a lot of this is made possible in part to our top game development tools and middleware partners adding support to the Universal Windows Platform. And so, to take a quick step back and look at kind of the bigger picture here, Windows and Xbox have been converging. When we add new features to Windows, it transfers over to Xbox. And we've been taking the features and ideas that make Xbox such a great place for gaming, and we've been bringing them to Windows. In 2015, we brought Windows 10 to the Xbox One and started delivering UWP games on Windows, leading with our first party. 2016, this past year, we converged the Windows and Xbox store. We brought them together because a unified store can be a better, more complete store experience. And in doing so, we brought UWP apps to Xbox One. Now we're looking at 2017, where this presentation fits in. The line between console and PC is continuing to blur. The Universal Windows Platform is the key that brings it all together, with UWP games able to run on both Windows and Xbox as we continue improving the platform for games. And those are just kind of the big highlights there for each year, but even the little things we see with things like the Xbox app and Game Bar on Windows, the line dividing Windows and Xbox continues to become more of a gradient of features and functionality. So how are we actually improving UWP in 2017? Let's actually get into what some of those features and improvements are. Well, first, the Xbox Live Creators Program is how we're enabling all game developers to ship their UWP games across both Windows and Xbox. I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but this is a big one, and it's awesome to have games that will be able to ship across both using the same UWP package. With Xbox Play Anywhere, we are enabling game developers to support cross-platform purchases and maintain continuity in their games. It is a huge value to consumers to be able to play their games across Windows and Xbox and bring saves, add-ons, and achievements with them. Game mode is a big new feature I'll be diving into in detail that will enable your games to run better on Windows and adding new functionality to allow UWP games to maximize their performance. And we have Windows Sonic, providing fantastic spatial audio. I know Scott talked about this earlier today, but if you weren't able to check out his presentation, I definitely recommend watching it online on Channel 9. There's some really cool stuff going on with spatial audio, and it's really neat to see that demo in action and really hear what's going on. Streaming install is another feature I'll go into in detail, where we're enabling developers to provide faster installation through incremental downloads. This is a fantastic feature for consumers because it's a way to reduce that often overwhelming download time of large games, and instead download just enough so our players can begin playing the game while we download the rest of the assets and experience in the background. Beam is a really cool addition that enables interactive streaming. You can learn all about this, and I think the first talk tomorrow with Greg. I highly recommend checking out this talk. Beam is enabling some really cool features and scenarios for you as game developers to engage that streaming community. Xbox Live is another highlight. We're enabling more games to become live-enabled on the Universal Windows platform. And more features to be able to connect your gamers to their social experiences with their friends. And all of that and more is coming with the Creators Update, as we continue to make UWP the best platform for game developers. And like I said, a lot of these are going to be covered in more detail, either later today and tomorrow, but I'm just going to jump into a couple of them and show you what we've brought to the platform. Starting off with Game Mode. Game Mode is a new concept coming to the Universal Windows platform with the Creators Update. And at its core, the idea is to focus the existing hardware on providing the best possible gaming experience. So when we look at Windows, look at the whole operating system, a game is just one process among many that are all using CPU and GPU resources. But games need as much of those resources as possible to provide the best experience. Game Mode is a way to get more of those resources exclusively for your game. And so this means a couple of key things. The first is isolating the game's CPU resources from interference by the rest of the system, and making sure that the game gets as much power out of the GPU as possible. So how do we do that? Well, when a game has Game Mode enabled, and I'll explain what that means in a second, and the game has focus, meaning the user's interacting with your game, we will allocate a majority of the CPU cores as being exclusive to your process. And we will migrate all threads from all other processes in the system off of those cores, giving your game exclusive access to the CPU time on those cores. This means if, for example, you're running on a machine with 8 CPU cores and your game is in game mode, 6 of those cores might be entirely exclusive to your process, and everything else in the system will run on the remaining 2 cores, reducing contention and freeing up the maximum potential throughput for your game. And on the GPU side, GPU is, of course, shared between everything rendering to the screen, but we're optimizing the scheduling of that shared time to give an even greater percentage of the GPU cycles to your game, and giving it favorable graphics memory residency so you can squeeze every last bit of power and make your games run smoother and with more detail. And to ensure that we can be flexible to both the needs of gamers and developers, there are some different ways that this feature can be enabled. The first is where the developer does, well, absolutely nothing. On Windows, any user can bring up the game bar and enable game mode as a setting for the running application, or enable it at a system-wide level through Windows settings. This gives the user control over whether or not they want this feature enabled to be giving that extra boost to the application. And I'll just emphasize here that this is a Windows feature. This isn't actually exclusive to the Universal Windows platform. For any game or application, you can bring up the game bar and enable game mode to provide the same core isolation and improved GPU scheduling for that process. And that's what game mode is. However, we have also introduced some new features and APIs to the Universal Windows platform to be able to take better advantage of game mode. And since we're here at GDC, let's talk about what you as developers can do to maximize performance with game mode. You can explicitly enable your game for game mode by adding an expanded resources capability to your UWP game's manifest. And this, in turn, will cause your game to launch into game mode by default. So for those in the audience who aren't very familiar with UWP development, a key piece of your UWP package is its manifest. And a manifest is just a file, it's an XML, that defines some data about your game. Things like what your package's name is and what logos to show in the start menu. And one of the key pieces in the manifest is what capabilities the game would like to declare. So inside of your XML, inside of your package, in the capabilities tag, you write that line to declare the capability named expanded resources, and then when your game runs, it will be put into game mode automatically by the system. And that's a new capability added with the creator's update, but adding this capability does more than just defaulting your game to game mode. It also enables certain APIs that you can use to control your game's response. These are new functions available to the game that will only work if expanded resources is declared in your manifest. The first one there, has expanded resources, will set the given bool based on whether or not the game is in game mode. And so to kind of explain that, if you have expanded resources set, then your game will launch into game mode by default. But a user could still open up Game Bar and turn game mode off for your game if they wanted to for some reason. So this function will get the current state of your game, whether or not it's in game mode. This will also set that bool to false if the game currently doesn't have focus. So this is just a way to get the current state. The second new function will set that long to the number of exclusive CPU cores that you will get if game mode is enabled. So the nice thing here is this will be the same no matter what state your game is in, whether it is in game mode, whether it's not, whether it's just starting up and hasn't been put into game mode yet, this will always return that same value. So if you're on that 8-core system, this will always return 6. So that means you can run this function as soon as your game starts up and figure out if the machine you're running on is a good target for using game mode, or using the exclusive cores from game mode. And that final new function will intentionally release the exclusive CPU cores and return CPU functionality to the way things currently work today on Windows without the creator's update. And if you're in game mode, you will still get the increased GPU memory residency and increased GPU time. But this returns the CPU functionality to the way it works today, where you can schedule your threads across all of the cores, but you won't have exclusive access to cores. So kind of the philosophy here with this last one is a kind of first do no harm. We want to give you those exclusive cores. We want to give you more power. But it's still up to the developer whether they want to take advantage of this or just keep things the way they are. And I'll show some code in just a bit that'll hopefully explain how these might be used and what types of code you might want to have that'll take advantage of them. But there's one other thing that changes when you declare expanded resources in your manifest. The function getSystemCPUSetInformation is something that already exists today on Windows, which provides information about the CPU sets for the system that you're on. Mainly, this information is used to determine which CPU sets an app may want to run its threads on. And in the case of games, the CPU set APIs are often used to ensure that key threads aren't scheduled on the same CPU cores. Well, when a game has game mode enabled, there's an additional piece of this structure that will light up called allocated to target process. So you get the CPU set and figure out if it's allocated to your process. This will tell you whether or not that CPU set is one of your exclusive game mode cores. So when you call get system CPU set information, you'll get this huge block of data back for each CPU set, and you can iterate through them and figure out which cores are allocated to your process, and then decide from there where you want to put your different threads. So then when you're scheduling the threads, you can decide, you know, maybe I want my main thread to run on this exclusive CPU set, and that'll be the only thread on that set. And then my render thread will have it on another, audio thread could be on another, et cetera. And the way you actually accomplish this is primarily through two other CPU set functions. And these are set thread selected CPU sets and set process default CPU sets. So the first one, set thread selected CPU sets, is how you actually say, I want this thread to run on this CPU set or run in one of this group of CPU sets. So you have your main thread and you say, okay, here's a handle to my main thread. I've iterated through all the different CPU sets. I've figured out which ones are allocated to my process, and I've decided that this CPU set is the one I want my main thread to run on. Well, great. You call set thread selected CPU sets, pass in that handle. For that list of CPU set IDs, you'd pass in, you know, if you've been allocated 1 through 6 as your exclusive cores, you say, okay, I want it running on 1. Great, you pass that in, and your main thread will run on CPU set 1. And again, when you get to your render thread, you say, okay, I want it on 2, and only 2. Great, it'll run on CPU set 2. Now you know those two threads will not be run on the same CPU core. And then we could go through, and for each other thread that we make, set it to a different CPU set, and say, you know, okay, I got my audio thread on 3, I got some AI stuff going on 4, this thread pool can run all on 5 and 6, and whatever else we have going on. And you could set that all explicitly, or we can use the second function, set process default CPU sets, and say, for any other threads that I create, where I don't explicitly set it to a particular CPU set, I want you to pick from this pool of CPU set IDs. So in this case, we pass in a handle to our process, and then we'd pass in, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5, and 6. So that way we know that any other threads we create, they're not going to be put on 1 or 2. They're not going to interfere with our main thread or a render thread, but they'll be spread out across the remaining CPU sets. So hopefully that gives you an idea of how these APIs can be used. I kind of just ran through them real quickly, but there's plenty of other information and documentation online. If you think this is something that your game can take advantage of. But the bottom line is, between the new game mode APIs and the existing CPU set functionality, your games will be able to schedule their threads exactly how they want on the exclusive cores to maximize their performance. And so here's an example of something a game might do. This is a benchmark function. It's something that a game might call really early in their process when they're first starting up. And, you know, let's say this game's done some profiling, they kind of know what their performance profile is, and they know that if they can get 3 exclusive CPU cores, then great, they want to take advantage of exclusive CPU cores and maximize their performance with game mode. Whereas, you know, maybe if they can only get 2 or less, then they'd rather just share all the CPU cores in the system. So with this, what they do is they're just going to get the exclusive CPU count, and they will make sure that they have at least 3 exclusive CPU cores, and then they'll know that this machine is a good target for taking advantage of game mode. And if not, then they can call release exclusive CPU sets and not use the exclusive cores. And again, if they're in game mode, they will still get that increased GPU time regardless, and memory residency regardless. But this would be a case where a game might have done some profiling and decided they will run better without the exclusive cores, at least when they have fewer than 3 CPU sets exclusive to them. And so in that last benchmark example, we set a variable saying, yes, we want to take advantage of exclusive cores. So here's where we actually use that variable and set those values. So this is something that a game might call once per frame, or maybe once every couple of frames. And that first exclusive capable variable is where we is the value that we just set in our last example. So if we know we want to take advantage of it, then we can see if we're in game mode with the has expanded resources function. And if the state of game mode is changed, then we can apply the appropriate policy for CPU sets for our game. In this case, apply expanded resource set and apply shared resource set will prepare the game to set the threads accordingly. So apply expanded resource set is where we might iterate through that big block of data, find out which cores are allocated to our process, and set up our threads to be put on those cores. And apply shared resource set might do something similar, but wouldn't be taking that allocated to target process variable into account. So hopefully this gives you an idea of how some of the games out there might be able to take advantage of exclusive CPU cores and use the new APIs to set up your games. And so all of that was concerned with the CPU side of game mode, but here's just a bit more detail on the GPU side. There isn't too much that's really actionable here from a development perspective, but just to explain a bit more of what I mean by increased GPU time and memory residency. So GPU, of course, needs to budget its time between everything in the system, though obviously the majority of the time is given to whichever process has focus. So if your user's playing a game, that's the thing that gets the most GPU time. That's how it works today, that's what we're all familiar with. But if that game that has focus is also in game mode, then we're making that majority of the GPU time just a little bit larger and reducing that time for everything else in the system. Meanwhile, the GPU's memory will favor that game more and try to keep the game's data resident over other concurrent activity in the system. And so this is really going to be a benefit to games where a user might be, you know, having other experiences happening on a second monitor, for example. That GPU time, some of it's going to be taken up for that second process, or if the user's playing some video or something like that. This will give a bit more of that GPU time back to your game, and that other process can run with a little bit less. And that's truly just the beginning of what we have in store for game mode. There is a lot that we want to do in this space to make sure that when an application is in game mode, it delivers the best set of options and resources for the developer and the best experience that the machine can provide for the gamer. And with the Creators Update, you can try it out now and ship UWP games with the expanded resources capability and use the APIs to get the most power out of the system. So definitely check us out. There'll be some more detailed documentation that'll be available online as we get closer to the release of the Creators Update. So that was all about how game mode is making games better and faster and enabling UWP games to optimize their utilization. But we're also expanding the reach of your games by enabling them on Xbox. For 2017, UWP games are on Xbox. This is that truly universal part of the Universal Windows platform. If your game fits within the app performance envelope, and I'll explain that in a second, then you'll be able to use Windows Dev Center to publish your game in the Windows Store to both Xbox and Windows 10. You can certainly have different SKUs of your game if you want for each platform, but it's now possible to have one code tree that builds a single UWP package that will run on both Windows and Xbox. But that, of course, brings up that important question, what is that app performance envelope? What am I talking about? Well, here are the numbers. On Xbox One, that means 4 shared CPU cores, about 50% of the GPU's full potential power, and 1 gigabyte of memory. And while there are many games in the Windows Store that will fit well within those numbers, we know that that will not work for every game. Currently, that's what's available. However, we're also working hard to unlock more resources for your UWP games. If your game can run with those resources, great. You can hop into Windows Dev Center, submit your game to run on Xbox. However, if you have a game that cannot run with those resources, with the Creators Update on Xbox One Dev Kits, there is a developer beta where you can experiment with unlocking more resources for your game on Xbox. And the way you unlock those resources is actually by having the expanded resources capability in your manifest. Now, I want to be very clear. If you want to ship a UWP game on Xbox One with the Creator's Update, those resources are what's available. The developer beta I'm mentioning is something that we're looking into. We want to give UWP games on Xbox as much resources as possible, but this is something we're still iterating on. You can try it out, but it does have the potential to change. We do plan to expand the resources available on Xbox One, but games that want to ship with the expanded resources will need to wait for a future update. And so with UWP games on Xbox, this opens up some new possibilities. Anyone can now build live-enabled games, and through the Xbox Live Creators Program, target Xbox One. And because this is a universal platform, we get a lot of features coming for free from Windows. It might be kind of a silly example, but keyboard support is available on Xbox because it's an API inherited from Windows. Right after this talk, Brian Tyler will go into detail on exactly how you can enable your game for live and what options are available. And you can also check out the ID at Xbox program. There's that URL, there are some cards on the table in the back, and there's also a ton of people at the lobby bar here in the South Hall who are more than happy to answer any questions you have about ID at Xbox. And another great benefit to games with the Creator's Update is we now support Direct 3D 12 for your UWP games on Xbox. This means you'll be able to take advantage of the latest and greatest Direct 3D features to make your game that much faster and prettier. And it's the same on both Windows and Xbox. If you're making a UWP game and you want to ship on both, you don't need a separate SKU. You'll be able to have the same Direct 3D stack and run it on both Windows and Xbox. And Direct 3D 12 is just faster and more efficient than any Direct 3D we've ever had. And that means more power for you and better performance for your games. So definitely check it out. There's tons of details online. I've put one MSDN link there, but there's also, I think we have samples on Git and an official Microsoft YouTube channel for Direct 3D 12 tutorials. So tons of information. And I know I'm pointing in a lot of different directions here, but I just want to make sure that I mention all of the different resources we have available. So if you're interested in some more general info about starting to get your UWP game on Xbox, there's documentation already available online with tons of resources, including FAQs, samples, and just more getting started info. And games that need access to the full Xbox Live stack or the full power of the Xbox One hardware with hardware-based XDKs and dev kits can work with the IDX program at any time, ID at Xbox program. And another great feature for UWP games in 2017 is streaming install. I mentioned it a little bit at the start, but this is a very exciting feature because it helps us as a game development community tackle what I think is kind of a growing concern with digital content. Truth is, there is a trend with digital distribution where as games get larger and larger, players are having to wait longer before they can start playing our games. The time between that initial purchase of a game you're excited to play and actually getting to play it is growing. And it's growing for a really good reason. You know, games are getting massive. We're packing so much content into games. We're increasing the resolution of assets, adding different levels of detail, you know, more audio. And as we continue to improve on both the quality and quantity of assets in games, game sizes will continue to expand. And it's all to make the game experience better for the player. But the reality is, one of the first experiences a player has with a game is often staring at a download bar that may take, you know, hours. And that's normal. You know, I think we've come to expect that as consumers. But what if we could drastically reduce that initial time between purchase and play? That is where streaming install comes in. Streaming install is a way for a UWP developer to drastically minimize that download time and begin by downloading just what is necessary for the game to be able to start playing, and let our players start playing the game while the rest of the experience and content can be downloaded in the background. For some of you, this will be a familiar concept. If you've downloaded and played games on Xbox One, you've probably likely seen some similar functionality in action. Or if you've done AAA console development before, this may sound a little familiar. Well, now with the Creators Update, we're introducing streaming install to the Universal Windows platform. This way, your players can spend less time waiting before they can jump into your game, because the game can begin as soon as that minimum set of content has been downloaded. And the process to enable this for your game is pretty simple and low overhead, and will provide a really nice benefit to your players. And trust me, you know, I'm a pretty avid gamer. I will absolutely thank you for implementing streaming install. So if you want to improve that download experience for your players, and you know, hopefully you do, how can you make this happen? Well, starting with the Creators Update, you can enable streaming install for your game with these three steps. And I'll jump into each one just a little bit. The first is creating an XML file called a content group map that will organize all of your files into different groups that can be downloaded individually. The second is to use the streaming install APIs to make sure that the content that you need is downloaded before the player reaches it, or reprioritize your content downloads if the user heads in a different direction or heads towards content you didn't expect them to. And the final piece is we have some great tools that will hopefully make the process of implementing streaming install go as smoothly as possible, so you can ship streaming installed games with as little work as possible. So just to give a quick overview of what these steps look like, here is an example of a content group map XML file. This isn't everything in the file, but hopefully it'll give you an idea of how this will work. You'll define a set of files that are required to run the game, and this set will be downloaded first. So in this case, in my example game, I've said, okay, I definitely need my executable, and I need all of the assets for level one. That's what we need to download before I can ever start playing my game. Then any automatic content groups will be downloaded in the background while the game is running. So in this case, I have an automatic content group named level two, and I've said it contains, you know, all the assets for level two. I don't actually need them to start my game up right away. Those can be downloaded while my player plays level one. And so this is obviously a very simple example. In a full game, there'll be many, many different content groups in the automatic section, and some of them will be shared between a lot of different levels. Some of them will be specific to your end game and can wait until the very end. Some of them will be, you know, assets that can happen, that can be accessed throughout, but maybe some of them can be accessed very, very early on, and so maybe those go in the required set, even if, depending on which way the player goes, they aren't explicitly required at the very, very beginning. So this will depend a lot on the way the game is implemented and what type of assets you have. So in this case, you know, maybe this is some kind of platforming game where I have a very explicit set of content needed for level one, and then a very explicit set of content for level two. And we can partition those very easily and really reduce that initial download. There are other games, particularly like open world games, where you can access, you know, 90% of the content within the first 5 minutes of playing. That's where the authoring of the content group map gets a little bit more complicated, and that initial required group may still end up being pretty large. But there's a lot of games that can take advantage of this and really reduce that initial download time. So once you've authored your content group map, once you have all your files set up, the streaming install APIs are what enable you to manage the download of your different content groups. So there's a lot of detail here packed into these three examples, but I'll just give you quick rundown of what they can do. That first example shows how you can make sure that the files for level 2 are downloaded before the player gets to them. So you can use get content group async, which will give you the content group. You can get its state. If it's staged, that means that all of the files in that content group have been downloaded and that you're safe to load your player into level 2, and all of the assets in that level 2 content group will be available. And that is, of course, the ideal example. But if it is not staged, then we jump down to the second code example, where you will have to request that it is downloaded as soon as possible. And so to do that, you just say that we have this content group named level 2. We want it staged with the highest priority. And then we know that that level 2 content group will be downloaded as soon as it can possibly be downloaded. And that kind of brings us to this third example, which is then we probably want to show our user a bit of information about what's going on. So either this may be a progress bar or some kind of information saying, level 2 is currently being downloaded. And so this piece of code shows us how we can set up a listener to get progress events for that download and let our user how close level 2 is to being available. And in the meantime, we could also give that information to our player, but then let them either replay level 1 or keep exploring areas that are currently downloaded, or however you want to define that experience. And ideally, we only ever use that first code example. Ideally, by the time our player finishes level 1, level 2 is available. By the time they finish level 2, level 3 is available, and so on. But maybe, as you're testing and profiling the game, you notice, a lot of players, a lot of our QA department is really, they're getting past level 1 and they're just waiting for level 2 in a normal download scenario. Well, if that's the case, then, maybe level 2 is really actually part of your required group if it provides a better, more complete flow of experience if your user doesn't always have to wait for level 2. Because, by the time they finish 1 and 2, then we definitely have level 3 downloaded in the majority of cases. So this is something that you can always tweak based on your game. And so for that QA department, for that testing, we also have some great tools for making that process easier. These are some of the APIs that you can use in your own test tools to debug your game's response to different package download states. So in this code, we get the package manager, and we get the debug settings from that, and that allows us to perform debug operations on our game during development. It can do more than just these functions, but these are just two really key examples. And I'll also mention that this can be done while the game is currently running. So you don't need to shut down your game, set a different state for your package, and then load it back up. This can just be something you call in through your test tool at any time to set the different download states and verify your game's response. So that first example shows how we can use set content group async to immediately set the state of level 2. And in this case, we're setting it to the content group state not staged, meaning the content has not been downloaded. But the second example is where we can set it to be currently staging and give it a percentage. And this will also fire off that event to let any listeners know in our game that the content is 50% downloaded. So between these, we can verify that the game blocks access to levels and content that aren't downloaded yet. And then we can also verify that the game responds accordingly as we get those different progress events. And make sure that that's reported to our players. There are other tools as well beyond just those debug APIs. The PowerShell command add apex package, which is normally used to install an apex package during development, now has a new flag called required content group only, which, as you might expect, will only install that first required set of content so you can test your game and make sure that it works as you would expect when only that is downloaded. And then If you want to complete that installation, you can always just use the normal add Epix package command, which normally just installs your full game. Well, if you've installed it with required content group only, this will finish that installation and add the rest of the content. And also, Pix for Windows, which Sean and Max just discussed in the last presentation, also has a profiling tool for streaming install. And that'll help you with authoring that initial XML so you don't have to do it all by hand and figure out, okay, this we definitely use this in level one, so let's put it in that level one content group. So you can use Pix to kind of profile your game and figure out, okay, this set of files was loaded as I was going into level one, this set was loaded in level two. So if you're here for that presentation on Pix, then you'll know that Pix is a really awesome tool. It helps with helps out with all stages of development. It has way more functionality than just this one piece right here. But this is just one super useful tool it has, particularly for streaming install. And that same streaming install functionality applies to updates as well, with some additional benefits. First, updates are done in 64 kilobyte blocks to minimize what needs to be downloaded. So that means, you know, if you're adding an update to your game and you're updating just adding something on the end of a 100 megabyte file, you know, we won't re-download that 100 megabyte file. We'll just download the updated parts of it in 64 kilobyte chunks. Additionally, if you're updating existing content or adding new content to existing areas of your game, then you can just update that content group map XML, and the APIs will behave as you might expect. So, you know, if you're adding new content to level two and you load back into your game, level two will no longer report fully staged. It'll have a staging, and that, you know, percentage left is what the new download is. So that existing code that we already have that blocks access to level two will once again block access if level two is currently updating. So we can make sure that all the files are up to date before loading in. And because of that functionality, there's one really cool scenario that lights up here for updates. And that is if nothing is changed within that initial required content group, then your game will be immediately launchable as soon as the player starts the update. So you know the standard flow of, okay, you know, I logged in, I see my game's updating, okay, how long is this gonna take? Let's start it now, maybe, you know, I'll go grab a glass of water, whatever it is. Now your user starts that update and can immediately launch back into your game if nothing was changed in that required group. And that's a really cool scenario for the gamer. And you know, depending on what the update's doing, you know, if they get back in and they want to load into their level, then if we didn't update any content in the level that they're in, great, they load right back in. If we did, well, then we can reprioritize those content group downloads and say, okay, they're loading into level five, great. Reprioritize level five and show some information, and then the user might have to wait, you know, a minute or two for just the new content in level five, but they don't have to wait for that full download of the full update before they can start playing your game again. And so that's just really cool. And just one other thing I wanted to mention here is that those block level deltas, those 64 kilobyte updates, or update blocks, those will happen for all UWP apps, not just games using streaming install. So you'll automatically see very fast updates regardless, but the ability to make it instant with nothing changing the required group is just awesome. So definitely check out streaming install. We will have more detailed information closer to the release of the Windows 10 Creators Update. It's just one more way that we're providing, we're improving the gaming experience on the Universal Windows platform. And it's a great way for you as developers to be able to improve that download experience for your players. So that is pretty much all the time that I have to talk about new features. I just wanted to wrap up with some thoughts on where to go from here. So we have tons of documentation available for making UWP apps and brand new info on how to get started shipping your games on Xbox One with those two links there. We have great tools. Pix is a fantastic tool that will help all throughout development, and it can really make profiling and debugging your games much easier. It has way more than just the streaming install profiler. If you aren't already, get set up with Visual Studio 2017 for the best experience building UWP apps and games, and also so you can take advantage of the great new features in the Creators Update. And if your game depends on middleware support, you can always double check with them on what their support status is for UWP. Many of them already have full support. So this is a final note, you know, start making UWP games. This is where we're investing our time. This is where we're really taking your feedback to heart and improving the platform. Game mode increases performance. Streaming install improves the experience for gamers. And all the new features for 2017 are making UWP the best platform to provide the best gaming experience. We're increasing your reach with the ability to ship those games on Xbox One and enabling live features through the Xbox Live Creators program or the full feature set through the ID Xbox program. Every new Windows update will continue to improve the performance and features for the Universal Windows platform. And you can always check out those features beforehand and give us feedback through the Windows Insider program. And that is how we're evolving the Universal Windows platform in 2017. And with that, I'll say thank you for your time, and I will open it up for a couple questions.